The Five Leadership Questions podcast is brought to you by Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. Southeastern desires to equip pastors, missionaries, theologians, scholars, and other believers to obey the commands of Jesus to make disciples anywhere and everywhere God calls them to go. Attend preview days at Southeastern Seminary to see firsthand how God is training up students to serve all over the world as pastors, ministry leaders, missionaries, teachers, and more. Preview days include opportunities to meet our world-class faculty members during an informal panel discussion as well as a faculty dinner. You will also have the opportunity to sit in on classes, tour the campus, and get answers to all your questions. Preview days cost $20 per person, and the next one will be September 29th, 2016. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. Again, that's sebts.edu/5LQ. Now, enjoy the podcast.
Hey, and welcome to the Five Leadership Questions podcast. I am your host, Barnabas Piper. Normally, this is when I introduce my co-host, Todd Adkins, but today, for this intro, I am flying solo, so you don't get to hear Todd give his standard greeting that I'm not even going to try to imitate because that's his thing, and I wouldn't want to botch it. So for regular listeners, so sorry you have to miss that. For new listeners, Todd has a greeting that you'll have to come back to the next episode to hear. It's just his standard flavor that he brings to the podcast. But the conversation we had with our guest today, Todd and I were both on it, had a great conversation with Dale Partridge. So you may have run across Dale. He is on Twitter at Dale Partridge. He's on Instagram, has a significant following, does a lot of interacting and sharing there. So you may have seen that. You may have run across his book, People Over Profit, Break the System, Live with Purpose, Be More Successful. That was a really well-received book a year or two ago that it came out. So People Over Profit is his book. But a little bit about Dale's story, or at least his bio, he shares more of his story. Dale was fired from 15 jobs before he found his niche. So that doesn't give you a lot of confidence in him as a leader, I wouldn't imagine. But failure is often the thing that sets up somebody well as a leader. And the reason he was fired is because, as he put it, he was simply unemployable. Now, he attributes some of that to habits that he needed to break in terms of work ethic and things, but some of it is because he was wired to be a starter, an entrepreneur, and that's where he found his niche. So he ended up starting multiple businesses. He ended up building multiple businesses to that million-dollar threshold, so successful smaller and mid-sized businesses. But then in recent years, he and his wife have actually sold their stock in those businesses and handed them off to other people. And they moved to the Pacific Northwest, where they could slow down, live a slightly simpler life. That's really what they were after the rat race of starting a business. And some of you will know that leading and running your own business is a really hectic and challenging pace of life. So they're doing that. And then he started something called Startup Camp, and that is Dale's effort to take everything he has learned, all the talents that he has in the area of entrepreneurialism, and coach others how to launch and start their own businesses. So it's a process that he leads people through. So you can go to startupcamp.com to learn more about that, as well as see Dale's leadership blog, find out more. I think you'll enjoy this conversation. He's a refreshing personality. He has a lot of good things to say. I think what talking about learning as a younger leader, especially, and some of the things that he has grown through the challenges, that was something that I benefited from. So keep an ear out for that. Todd and I enjoyed the conversation. We think you will too. But before we jump into that, I just want to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, Southeastern Baptist Theological Seminary. You heard the bumper at the beginning that highlighted their preview day that's coming up. And so I just wanted to say thank you to them for sponsoring. For those of you who are interested in theological education for advanced degrees and in some area of ministry, check out Southeastern Seminary. You can go to sebts.edu/5LQ. That's sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more and see what they have to offer in terms of Master of Divinity degrees, multiple other master's degrees. They even have a college on site there, undergrad. They offer distance education. So lots of options from Southeastern. We really appreciate their sponsorship. Now, here is our conversation with Dale Partridge. Enjoy the podcast. We are here today with Dale Partridge. Dale, thanks so much for joining us on the Five Leadership Questions podcast.
Hey, excited to be here.
Absolutely. And listeners, you heard in the intro kind of the full litany of the things that Dale has been part of and starting, and him as a serial entrepreneur and now training other entrepreneurs as well. But Dale, would you introduce yourself a little bit about your family, a little bit about your story, how you got to where you are now? Those are things that just give listeners a sense of who we're talking to today beyond the resume, which they could Google themselves. But so more of a sense of who you are and who our guest is.
Yeah. So, I've been a serial entrepreneur for going on 13 years now. I was married at 24 to my wife, Veronica. Going on almost 7 years here. We got two kids, 6 months and almost three years old. And just loving that. We live in the Pacific Northwest on a farm. Grew up in Southern California, so totally different background. I was like, beach kid. And, it's so funny how people, like, they grow up at the beach and they want to move to the mountains. And if they grow up in the mountains, they want to move to the beach.
And if they grow up in the Midwest like me, they want to move anywhere.
anywhere to a city or something. Yeah. So
see, I grew up on a farm and I am trying to work my way back to a farm at some point.
Oh, I'm telling you, being a farmer, it used to be one of those things where it's like, if you didn't have money, you lived on a farm. Like now, like it's so expensive to like live on a farm and to buy like 10 acres of land and build house. I mean, we were enjoying that. Just trying to create a life where we can do more with less. And, I think the thing that keeps people following me over maybe some other influencers is I have this interesting dichotomy of business and family, where I want to be the best husband and the best dad, as well as an incredible entrepreneur, but not compromising either area, as most entrepreneurs can. Mm-hmm. So I think that's kind of the main reason that I have the following that I have, is trying to find that balance and the seeking and the adventure and searching for that.
Well, there was one thing I saw in your bio as I was looking you up to put together some questions and things like that. I saw that before you began starting businesses, you had been fired from 15 jobs, and you put that on your own website. So I don't feel like it was a smear campaign. I'm curious as to A, how many of those jobs you can list, and B, what in the world?
Yeah, I was unemployable, and I didn't know it. And if I look back at my childhood, I was completely entrepreneurial. I mean, from the very beginning, my parents always, used to say that I should be a lawyer, or I was really good at talking myself out of things. I was also a really good salesman. And, my first job was at a skate shop, which I, enjoyed for a little bit, but just, I wouldn't listen. I had too many ideas, and I wouldn't show up when they wanted me to. And I had a lot of obvious, immaturities that were going on at that period of my life as well that haven't been pruned out at that time. I got fired at a pet store. I got fired at a raceway. So many different spots that just weren't working correctly. And I finally just kind of realized that I needed to work for myself almost out of necessity.
Go ahead. Sorry.
No. So it was a weird season to try to kind of realize who I was. And, once I figured that out, I felt like life got a lot easier.
I just wondered if your Myers-Briggs was ENTP.
Oh, I mean, I've done all the tests and everyone just says that I'm off the charts, just totally independent, high D, high I, achiever, yeah. Activator, strategic, just totally kind of, totally off the charts over
you,
in that direction.
You just dropped three of my StrengthsFinder as well. So that's an interesting combo. You're talking to two ENTPs right now.
Somehow Todd is still employed. It is about the most entrepreneurial thing a person can say, to list jobs they got fired from and say those jobs just weren't working. So I got a kick out of that phrase.
I was an entrepreneur. I started things inside.
That's true. You started
larger
with
organizations.
You shook up the larger business.
All right. Well, I do want to ask you this question because I think it's always telling to start with this one, and that's, who are you learning from right now?
Mentorship has been such an important thing for me. I would not be where I'm at now. I've had so many incredibly deep, almost hurtful conversations over the past several years that just needed to be said. One of my favorite things to say to people is that, hey, a good mentor will tell you that you have a booger on your face. And for me, that was just, I had a lot of learning experiences that I needed to be emotionally matured, and I had to get rid of some behaviors. And I, you know, another one of my favorite quotes is that if you think wrong, you'll never live strong. And I was living, you know, in a weak state of mind for a long period of my life. I had a lot of habits that just needed to get rid of. I was dishonest in many ways. I would stretch the truth or tell white lies. And I had a lot of that, you know, those immaturities that were just kind of, I had tied so much success to that way of being. And I think that's the struggle that a lot of us have as leaders, as we go, you know, it's hard to get rid of a bad thing. You know, it's bad, but you've been so successful with it. You're like, but that's kind of what makes me successful.
And so it's a bit of identity tied to those things then.
Totally, totally. And so I went through a variety of mentorship programs. One of them was with Dr. John Townsend for a year. I spent 8 hours at his house once a month for about an entire year. And on top of that, I'd spent some time with him before and after. And he walked me through some very painful things, just deep, like humiliating, ugly cry, like emotional type stuff that I needed. You know, and I walked through a variety of mentorships, like from business guys to, you know, psychologist type people. And over the last maybe 2 years, I've had a guy who's kind of none of those, but just is more a spiritual mentor for me. He's one of these guys that has more fruit than anybody I've ever met. And he's got, you know, a family that loves him. He's got a wife who's radiant and his children who respect him and a good name, you know, in the community and a strong leader, and his finances are ordered and he's healthy and just has kind of what I call having it all.
It's like you just described the book of Proverbs.
Yeah, right. He's the five crowns of life, you know? he became this kind of, I go, okay, he's not an entrepreneur. I mean, he's self-employed, but he's not like building a great big business but he has walked me through some of these deeper spiritual things. And from that, I feel like I've become more of a man that my wife wanted, more of a leader that my employees wanted. It, you know, it's happened inside of that deep relationship. I mean, as close as two people can get in that type of relationship is very, it's something that I've been searching for, and just really having authority in my life. And that's, I think, what's really changed the game for me.
What led you to, like, what led you to do that, to open yourself up to that type of feedback, to that type of vulnerability?
You know, years ago, an older man once told me that there's three ways, this is the fastest three ways to maturity. And the first one was a mentorship. The second one was to be married. And the third one was to be a parent. And he says, if you have a mentor, you're married, and you have children, he says that's the fastest way to maturity because of just the variety of experiences. And for me, I've always
been the complete ringer it will put you through.
Exactly. Yeah.
So like, yeah, 3 nights ago, I'm totally cleaning up pee in the middle of the night, you know, like, and then also waking up in the morning and doing like a Facebook Live and another interview on a podcast and then working on my next book and like, you know, and then running downstairs to make sure that I'm helping my wife child train my daughter in terms of understanding how to react in situation. I mean, it is totally, you guys know, as just as parents and as fathers and as leaders, that just having that patience built in. And, you know, there's a reason that, you know, in the book of Timothy, elders are talked about as people that are, you know, married and have children who are obedient to them. I mean, there is a serious training ground there. And so having that has been very helpful for my business. I don't think that I would be nearly as successful, you know, without having those things. So that's definitely the, I guess, the case for it and why I went that direction.
And for listeners, we had Dr. John Townsend on the podcast probably around maybe episode in the 40s or 50s. So if you go back in our archives, you can find it there. If you go to lifeway.com/leadership and just search John Townsend, you can find that episode. It was a great interview. Let's hit our second question. And that is, what's the main point of emphasis for your leadership right now, either as a team, so with your work at Startup Camp, or for yourself in growing as a leader? But what is that main point of emphasis?
Don't get too busy. Don't get too busy making a living that you forget to make a life. And you know, there's this concept where so many leaders they work so that they can work more, and it doesn't make any sense to me. And we're addicted to achievement. And you know, my definition of entrepreneurship is to make more money with less time, so that we can do the things that we love. You know, with the people that we love. And this idea where we create a business to become an employee of our own company, and we work 60 hours a week and we make $100,000 a year, I go, cool, well, you just have like two full-time jobs is what you got going on now. So for me, I go, I'm not impressed with people that go, oh man, 80 hour weeks, I just hustling while, you know, I'm grinding while you're sleeping. And I'm like, you're an idiot. You know, this is not, this is not what you should be bragging about. You're working more than the average employee works. You know, an entrepreneur is someone who creates a system.
As you can say, I think the brag there is, and I'm sleeping while you're working.
Exactly, right? That's the kind of thing, is that, you know, I'm on vacation with my family while you're working. That's kind of something I'm impressed by. And so, you know, sure, there are seasons that we totally need to crush it and spend time there. But my thing is, you know, our goal is not to create businesses to work more. Our goal is to create businesses to work less. And the most important things in the world are our families and our relationships, you know, outside of the business, and our relationship with God and those things. So I'm constantly trying to fight for that. And I go, I'd rather make $200,000 and work 15 hours a week than make $2 million a year and work 60 hours a week. We just kind of have to come to that realization as entrepreneurs, as leaders, to go, hey, how much do we really need? And like, let's make it, and then just, you know, let's just keep moving on. We don't need to continue to make more money. It is a hard space to get in around, and every person has to deal with that intimately on their own. But that's just kind of the journey that I'm on.
Well, what are some of the steps that you have to take to kind of fight that, that addiction to more? Because I don't think most people set out to get to the 80 hours a week and the work addiction, but there's something that feeds that along the way. So how do you sort of cut that off and say, here's my ceiling, this is the goal that I'm setting out to achieve, and when I achieve it, that is enough? Or what, I don't know, I guess, what are those stops? What are those limits you put in place to keep yourself from going overboard?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of leaders have a deficit of affirmation. So they operate from the space of trying to just constantly being affirmed, and it's addicting when people are on the sidelines cheering you on. And the problem is that those same people will cheer you on all the way to the detriment of your family. Yeah, keep going, keep crushing, get on another plane, be another weekend away from your family, go, yeah. Like, that's happened. I mean, I've done the you know, 40 speaking engagements in 1 year and you know, 125 airplanes. And I just look back at my family and I go, like, that was the worst season ever. And sure, I made a lot of money, but like, that doesn't matter to me. I need to make enough money to survive and have a lifestyle that I want, but I'm not the guy that wants to go buy a Maserati, right? So I think the
idea
is that's
not a real practical farm vehicle.
It's not at all.
Well,
I think the idea is that you want to believe that who you go home to will always be what you come home to. And this kind of deep sense that those things are more important. So I think fixing some sort of healing, I had a lot of brokenness, at least for me. You know, I was the guy that if I wasn't healed, I would be the guy that's making $10 million a year, single, living in San Francisco. Like that's who I am without kind of the structure. And I'd be super wealthy, and I'd be known, and I'd be alone. And that's what happens to a lot of us without having kind of those boundaries put in place.
Yeah, it's interesting that you say that, because I feel like that, what you just described, though, in a, you know, $10 million a year, single, living in San Francisco sounds like a dream for a lot of people. Mm. That doesn't sound like an empty existence.
Yeah, it's my nightmare, you know, and it's other people's dreams. I mean, it is a sad perspective, you know. It's a spirit of independence that constantly just is like, I'm enough by myself, you know.
Sort of an idolatry of independence.
Yeah, it is. I mean, it is. It's just like, I don't need anything from anybody. You know, that's what that space goes into. Mm-hmm. And it is. It's a hard place to get away from.
There was a study, and I only remember this because I remembered the number well enough to Google it while you guys were talking. Sorry. But there was a study that was done that basically said money actually does buy happiness up to 75K. And after 75K, it actually starts to be detrimental to your happiness. And when you get to, it starts to go down. When you get to 150K or more, it actually goes way down into stress and all kinds of issues that result. And I had to look it up. It was a 2010 study from Princeton that was just very, I remember it striking me to say, oh, wow, that's, It makes sense when you think about it from the standpoint of about 75K is where you can, you know, an average family can take care of the basic needs that they have.
And yeah, then removes financial stress.
Yeah. Beyond that, you start to compare yourself to other people or, you know, yep. live with you within your own. You just keep wanting more and more and more. And the more and more you get, the more and more addicted you get to more.
You know, I had a friend that once told me, he said, you know, he was a wealthy guy and he gave a lot of money away. And his model was, hey, he just determined every year how much money he would make, and whatever he made past that, he would just give away. And I mean, he made lots of money. I'm talking $2-3 million take home a year. And he would just typically stay at like 200 to 250K. They had, you know, a couple properties that he would stay at, and that was just his space, and everything else past that he gave away. And he said, you know, Dale, I just made the determination that I can do all the same things as the guy that makes $2 million a year with 200, like I can go to the same restaurants and order the same meals, and I can take the same vacations, and I can drive the same cars, and I can, you know, go do the same fun things. And, you know, as the guy that makes $2 million a year, like I don't need to make that much money. And not to say that I don't want to be going down the poverty gospel route, meaning that it's okay. You know, I'm a capitalist in terms of just, I love the idea that we can control that. But I think I'm also a Christian, and I want to figure out what the balance is in my heart, you know, because, you know, there's, you know, one of my favorite quotes is that, you know, the way the person spends their money tells me a lot about their heart. And so, you know, just having that ability to manage and steward wealth really well. There's nothing wrong with having a lot of money, especially if you're doing good with it. I mean, I'd rather have it than the guy that runs the porn industry, you know. You know, one of my favorite quotes is that Satan's had the money long enough, you know, I'll take it and do something way better with it, you know. Yeah. So nothing wrong with having money and being super wealthy. It's just as long as you have the internal ability to control it well and steward it well.
Good deal. Well, I'm going to move us along to our third question, which is, what obstacles are you currently facing in leadership, either in your organization or personally, now that you have a 6-month-old baby?
Yeah, right. you know, obstacles are, I think, you know, just realizing that my past success doesn't determine my future success. You know, I'm actually just filming a video, and it's kind of about my story, and I have all these plaques. I'm like sitting next to them right now. There's like from Forbes and Los Angeles Times and Fortune magazine and all these like kind of press plaques, like, you know, they used to have hanging on the wall. And I have like, I'm not kidding, like 15 or 20 of them sitting on the floor next to me. And I was looking at them and I go, man, my past success doesn't dictate my future success. And it reminded me, there's a quote, I forgot who said it, but he said, you know, motivation or success isn't owned, it's rented, and the rent is due every single day. And I love that because it's this, you can replace those words.
I think that's a Peter Drucker quote.
It probably could be, right?
I think it's Drucker.
So the idea is that, you can replace that word with motivation, right? Like yesterday's motivation doesn't mean you're going to be motivated tomorrow. Mm-hmm. And so it's really hard to kind of come to the realization that there's no finish line in the success game. Like it's just constantly just going, like I'm pushing forward. The journey is that success. So for me, I just go, I'm I sometimes get tired and I go, man, like, I don't know if I can do more, you know? I'm get defeated. I'm like, man, that used to work and that's not working anymore. Now I have to go back and become creative again and come up with a new next best thing. And that's hard as a leader because it's just, you know, you come in waves. The people will write a book and it'll like knock it off the shelves, just crush it. And then they'll write four books in between that just are like mediocre books. And that season, I feel like I've come in and out of multiple times over the past 12 years. And it's hard, you know, it's just hard to go, oh, like, what's going to keep me motivated? What's going to keep me moving forward, especially as we mature and as we change?
I feel like motivation is entrepreneurs have a unique relationship with motivation too, because there's a newness factor that people with an entrepreneurial bent are constantly looking for, in terms of what else is out there, what's next, what's the, you know, there's a reason why you've started multiple businesses and are now helping other people start ventures. And so I think what you're describing is true for everybody, but there's a particular way that's an obstacle for an entrepreneur, I feel like.
Totally. I mean, it is, you know, it's a constant battle of contentment, right? And wisdom, right? And, you know, one of my favorite quotes from a podcast that I had on my show, a guy said, it's okay to want change. It's not okay to not be okay with where you're at while you're waiting for that change. And so for me, I go, I'm the guy that always wants change, right? I'm always wanting change, and it's okay to want that change. It's not okay to not be okay while you're waiting for that change. And I think a lot of entrepreneurs will get themselves in a situation where they're like, oh, like I need the next thing. It's like a drug. Like I got to move on to like, what's the next creative thing that's going to kind of bring me that high again, versus where I'm just learning to go, hey, you know what? Like, I really love where I'm at right now. Like, you know, I'm excited for whatever's next or whatever the future is, but learning to just be okay. And if that season used to be 6 months that I could hang, now I feel like it might be 2 or 3 years that I could hang in that. Like, okay. And I think as we grow older and as we mature as leaders, we get to learn to just, you know, move at the pace in which God's will is pushing us, mm-hmm. versus like, my will be done and I'm going to do this and I'm going to push forward and everybody's watching me. And so I think that shift in thinking and that growth is really, I think, what's needed.
I'm interested to hear how what you just said about contentment plays into our next question. And you've mentioned your family multiple times, the goal of being a more present husband and how being married and being a father has affected your leadership. The question is simply, what does leadership in your home look like? So I don't know if it plays into what we talked about earlier or this pursuit of contentment, but what does leadership in your home look like now?
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, we really try to order our lives and purpose our actions to follow the scriptures. We really try to be one in front of our kids, meaning that if I say, Aria, stop, you need to go sit down, and Veronica says, hey, you know, it's okay, I actually told her to do something, that's a break in oneness, right? We're not of one mind because I told her something and then mom actually said, no, I'm telling you something else. It's like, you know, as small as those things, we're trying to constantly be on the same page no matter what. Now, Veronica might bring me to the side and say, hey, I actually told her earlier to do something else. And then we would change together. And so the oneness is one thing. Me leading and her allowing me to lead has been a new thing over the last 2 years that has been really beautiful. And just, I feel like fallen in love with each other more. In terms of our family, you know, we're trying to teach our kids what it means to be obedient and what it means to be joyful, and that we get to choose the way we feel on certain things, and that we get to control ourselves. And so we're doing a lot of just kind of child training in many different ways, from sleeping to how to think and to how to feel. And you know, one of my favorite kind of teachings from a couple different books mentioned this topic is you know, don't break their spirit, but break their will. Meaning that you want them to bend their will to you as a parent, right? You want them to say, I want you, Dad, to tell me what to do. And I want to follow you and listen to you, Mom and Dad. And so we're trying to figure out the, you know, adventure and the discovery of those things as a family. And it's very complex and very fun and very hard. but we're definitely making progress.
Yes, hard. Yeah, but
yeah, very hard.
Todd and I both have kids that are maybe a little bit older than yours. And yes, it is a challenge, all of those things, for sure.
Well, and the more you add, and the more of them you add, and their personality mix and everything is, it changes stuff too. It's kind of crazy. We were baby wise people. We're like 80% baby wise people, which true baby wise people are like, you're not baby wise.
Yeah, right.
but we were, you know, and we still are. I mean, in our, you know, cul-de-sac, our kids are in bed at 7:30 and everybody's still outside playing. And they're going,
and that means you have an evening and none of the other parents do.
Exactly.
So, well done.
But, you know, there's certainly things like that because they are at an age. It's one of the reasons why I love classical education, is because it's not like you're programming a child, but they are at this stage in the game. They're able to have to take in way more information than you ever dreamed that they could. And while they're able to take that in, pour that in, and then teach them how to think. The problem with that is man, they are really good at arguing at some point, and we're already seeing that a little bit.
Well, I wonder where they get that from, Todd. I don't quite follow.
When you have logic, when you add logic and rhetoric together in elementary school kids, it gets ugly really fast.
I appreciated what you said about teaching your kids that they can choose how to feel in different situations and things like that. Just closely tied to that is sort of a teaching your kids self-awareness. So the sense of how they come across to other people or how they make other people feel. So I have two daughters who are 3 years apart in age, 10 and 7. And like the daily refrain is, how do you think that makes her feel when one of them is unkind to the other, which is a regular occurrence. And so it's just sort of this constant sort of massaging into their brains and hopefully their hearts, the sense of that, you know, you make other people feel better or worse with your actions and words, and having a sense of self-awareness to realize, oh, that's how I come across, with what I hope in the end will give them some sense of emotional intelligence. Yes. as they grow into adults.
Yeah, you know, and I mean, it's really well said, because, and it's constantly teaching them that empathy and to fall in love with the people that they talk with. One of my, you know, things that I always say is that, you know, I don't want your obedience if I don't have your heart, right? Like, I don't want a child who just follows me because of fear. I want a child that follows me because I've won her heart. Like, she loves me and I love her. And like, that relationship is very healthy. And so creating that kind of empathetic balance where you're teaching them how to feel and how to love and how to step in the shoes of other people and to realize how they come off to others. And it's a total art of creating really great humans. And, you know, I think more people need to be much more intentional with that, especially, you know, at these younger ages, because, you know, yeah, past 10 years old, they really kind of start to take on, you know, the media and all the other things that are kind of continually shape them just as a person living in our world today.
Well, I do want to take us back to your 20-year-old self. What would you tell your 20-year-old self about preparing to lead?
You know, people, man, this is a hard question. I'd probably say followers are volunteers. They're not people that you can force or buy to follow you. And protect your good name, because the moment you lose that, you lose everything. And at that age, I really struggled with you know, exaggeration was kind of like a big key thing that I did. I was always exaggerating. And I wasn't like a straight out liar, but I don't think a lot of people, I mean, there's people are, but a lot of people really struggle with the white lie, the stretching the truth, the half truth, the exaggeration. It's kind of like the blur around dishonesty. And for me, that has just been, I would have told, you know, 20-year-old Dale, like, you got to get rid of that now,
mm-hmm.
because it's going to cause so much pain for you and for other people. You know, you don't need to speed up. And exaggeration is this idea that you're not enough, right? It's that you're constantly needing to show more so that people will accept you. You know, you're looking constantly for, you know, just to be approved, right? Or that, like, you know, and that's the thing, is that I was always trying to do that. It took me a lot of really embarrassing conversations to kind of get through that. And I would just love to have avoided that. So yeah, just protecting your good name, honesty, and just, you know, realizing the implications that those small things in those moments really have on your life.
Yeah, when I was in my mid-20s, had a mentor who pointed out to me, he said, there's a difference between lying and misleading people, but both of them are equally dishonest. So, you know, you sort of talked about the blurred edges around dishonesty or around lying. And he basically said, you can lead people to believe something that is not true without ever saying something that is explicitly untrue. Mm. And that is as dishonest as just an outright lie. And that, you know, he was correcting something he saw in me, which I had a similar struggle to what you just described in terms of exaggeration and sort of fudging the truth to make myself appear a certain way and fill in some of those voids I thought I saw in myself. And so that has stuck with me, because over the years I have learned more and more the freedom of honesty. You know, if you tell the truth, there are never any questions that are going to come back and bite you. Nobody's going to find out anything that that is hidden, or, you know, realize you're less than what you said, because you said exactly what is. And it's really freeing to just say a thing and stand there and go, and I can stand by that because it is the whole truth, and there's no fudging or fuzziness about it.
Yeah, well, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you make sure you don't leave something out on purpose.
Right.
And then always out yourself. Like, that is one of the key things in leading up, and then leading laterally with your peers, is go ahead and out yourself, because that builds a level of trust that will, you know, will count way more in the course of your relationship with a person than, you know, something that turned out to be untrue or puffed up.
You know, and you realize that people start to like you for who you are, and it's a journey, right? Where you go, okay, I'm going to just decide to just not stretch the truth or not, you know, be dishonest. And it takes a series of years to believe that people will like you just the same, and that you can be just as successful, if not way more successful, because you're not going to get caught 2 or 3 years down the road and something, you know, you don't have to be this ruthless editor anymore, mm-hmm. you know,
and your successes have a real foundation to them, because they're built on something that doesn't, it's not chock full of holes that you invented.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, I think a lot of leaders have this stuff, especially in their past, especially as young leaders. Right. And, you know, it's kind of, but the sooner you can grab that, you know, the faster it is. I mean, leadership is so counterintuitive. It makes no sense. You know, it's like, you know, like up is down is up, you know, first is last, last is first. It's constant counterintuitive moments where you go, wait, so you're saying that I should out myself? You know, that's insane, right? but it is, it's the fastest way to earning that trust and that loyalty.
Absolutely. And I think that is probably a good place for us to finish this conversation. I'm sure we could talk more about it. There's a lot of things that we've left unexplored. But for the sake of listeners and for the sake of honoring your time, Dale, we'll wrap this up now. So thanks so much for being with us on the podcast. We've really enjoyed talking with you.
Hey, it's been a pleasure.
And for listeners, thanks so much for joining us for another episode of the 5 Leadership Questions podcast. If you would jump on iTunes and leave us a rating and review there, that helps other leaders like yourselves discover it. Because if you leave us ratings, it bumps us up the rankings, which is really nice for Todd's ego. But
yes, thank you.
But when we're higher in the rankings, people can find us. And so that's great. And then go to lifeway.com/leadership to see our show notes. So we'll have links to Dale's website, startupcamp.com. as well as to his book, People Over Profit, and then some of the best quotes from this episode that you can share on social media. You can also find all of our blogs and everything there as well. So that's lifeway.com/leadership. Thanks so much for listening, and tune in next time.
Don't forget to check out Southeastern Seminary's numerous education and training opportunities to help you grow in ministry. Visit sebts.edu/5LQ to learn more. That's sebts.edu/5LQ.